the OTV Sports app. Listen to OTV Sports Radio 24/7, plus all your favorite podcasts, including OTV Gold.
Are you a complete rookie?
The OTV Sports app, available to download now from your app store. The OTV Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Daniel Harris, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, it was one of those weekends where the goal tallies came down massively in the Premier League. Is this just what happens, where there's madness at the start, teams aren't fit, defensive mistakes happen, people get used to it, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're professionals, we need to start defending again?
I definitely think in the United-Chelsea game, we saw a couple of the teams who were trying to correct the defending that they've perpetrated. I mean, not just this season, really, but for quite some time. Definitely, as you would expect, as teams get fit, that defending will also get better. But I also felt like there's a bit more to it, rather than there were managers who were concerned about the way their teams were defending, and probably a little bit about their jobs as well. So they were picking teams to try and not concede. But I think as it settles down, we would expect to see fewer goals, because also teams are going to get increasingly used to the circumstances that they're in.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think that there was definitely players trying stuff in the first couple of weeks because they're not getting booed. There's not a gasp from the crowd every time they try stuff. But over a period of time, you forget to do that because it just becomes, this is how you play football again. And maybe those crazy goal tallies have changed, and football is going to go back to what it was, that football has caught up with the circumstances in a way.
Yeah, I definitely think that's possible. But I also think that one of the reasons also you see more goals, if you look at the standard of the Premier League, just the standard of attackers are improving. And not just in kind of the teams that we associate with the Champions League, but below that, almost every team, pretty much every team, has a couple of the players that will have you if you're not careful. We saw it with West Ham, for example. They're beating good teams, they're getting points against good teams, scoring goals. We've seen it with Palace beating United, for example. Although the biggest differential was the fitness differential. If you have that fitness differential and you also have Wilfried Zaha and Josh Townsend, then those are players who are good players who know what to do. And that's one of the things that we're seeing increasingly, is the players, kind of the mid-ranking Premier League clubs, are getting better players.
Yeah. Can we talk a bit about Man United? Marco van Basten insertion into the discussion over the course of the weekend, where he was complaining about the lack of minutes for Tony van de Beek and suggesting this wasn't a great move for him, was interesting. It seems to be, I mean, I think it's very early in anybody's career. If you look back at new players arriving at Manchester United, there's maybe Bruno Fernandes, and I don't know if there's anybody else who hit the ground running as fast as him, but everybody else has actually taken quite a bit of time to settle in, all the way back to Paul Ince, and maybe even Brian Robson. Is this surely nothing is going on here?
I don't think so. It's because he's a good player. He's come on, and pretty much every time he's come on, he's been good. He came on, scored against Palace, against Brighton. He won the corner that led to the winning goal. He was involved in the key second goal at Newcastle quite significantly. So I don't think it's that. Like, I would like to have seen more of him. Because one of the reasons was that he came and he was one of the only players in the squad who'd had a pre-season. He looked in good form. So I was surprised that United didn't want to make more of that, particularly when they knew the other players weren't fit, and particularly when things started going wrong. So, yeah, I think most people would have liked to have seen more of him. But, I mean, to say that he would have felt like he's made the wrong move after he signed, whatever, a 4 or 5 year contract, and after 5 league games in a month, it's ridiculous, really. I mean, it might prove to be right, because you could say something ridiculous and be proven right, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't a ridiculous thing to say when you said it. And there are plenty of games, and I mean, I think that one of the problems he might find, and I hope not, is that the way that Solskjaer likes to play is he likes 4-2-3-1 most of the time, and Van de Beek isn't that. And in the 4-2-3-1, really, then he's probably not considered an option in the two. And in the one, he's competing for a place with Bruno, who's going to play most of the games, but not all the games. Whereas if you play a 4-3-3, then I would say that him and Bruno together, with some legs behind them, would probably be United's best midfield combination. But I feel like they'll need to start keeping some clean sheets before we're likely to see that in big games. But we might see it against some of the less good teams at home. And I think that we will start to see him in some more games because whatever, even if he wasn't Ole's first choice, which apparently he wasn't, he's still a good player. And he wasn't, and Ole still would have signed off on buying him. So he wasn't bought to sit around and do nothing.
Do you think then that moving Bruno Fernandes out to the flank for a section of Saturday's game could be the first step in maybe getting Van de Beek and Fernandes together in a 4-2-3-1 setup, or was that just needs must on Saturday night?
Yeah, probably the latter. I felt like, everything about what went on Saturday night and what was frustrating about Saturday night watching United play was that it felt like it didn't need to be that way. So in some ways, that made it more annoying. Like if you look at the Spurs game, obviously they got gubbed 6-1 at home. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, that could be quite nauseating. But I guess like they were down to 10 men and it was just like, OK, they defended that way. But against Chelsea, it felt like they picked the wrong team in the wrong formation and then made the wrong changes into a game that they should have won in order to maintain momentum. But moving Bruno Fernandes to the wing, I felt like they probably felt that they had to do that in order to get Pogba on and in order to get Cavani on. When I guess to me, what would have made more sense would have been to have changed the formation to play with two strikers. But if you want to still keep that 4-2-3-1, then I wasn't sure what Cavani had done to earn the right to come on before Greenwood.
By all accounts, he's been going very well in training. He's been a really good influence around the training ground. That doesn't do it for you. You think Greenwood has racked up enough time and enough credit in the bank to at least be ahead of Edinson Cavani in the pecking order?
I think so. Because you're going on Greenwood was excellent at the end of last season. And also, just the conditions look quite good for Greenwood in that early shots that would skid, I felt like might have been difficult to save in that kind of weather. And you basically wanted someone, I thought, who would need to create their own chance rather than Cavani, who's kind of a centre forward waiting for things to be created for him. It felt like the way that Chelsea were defending, Greenwood's ability to shift it and then shoot with either foot without the defenders and the goalkeeper knowing what foot he was going to use would have been quite helpful in that circumstance. So, yeah, I mean, I would have done that. But the problem was also, I mean, just the team that was picked to begin with, you found that when it didn't work, there was too many players that needed substituting in order to be able to rejig in the way that United might have wanted. And I think that one of the problems was that probably that Solskjaer didn't think that Chelsea were going to play 3-4-3. And when they did, his formation of 4-2-3-1 is not a good match for 3-4-3. With three at the back, three centre-backs, there are two ways that you get around that. One way that you do it is by you get around the sides by playing wide players who stay wide. Or you do it with strikers, because all of a sudden, if you've got three centre-backs with one defence, with one striker to mark, if they've suddenly got two strikers to mark, that makes a big difference. Now, I expected United to play something very similar to what they played against PSG, because I think that that's the right formation to play every game. Feel like it's a compromise formation that gives you safety in numbers at the back, but means that you don't lose the numbers game in midfield still, so it gives you protection and the opportunity to create. In most games, I don't think United need to do that, because I think that they have players who are good enough to dominate in midfield and they can play 4-3-3, which would then give them an extra attacking player in the team. But against teams with good attackers like Chelsea have, if you play 3-5-2, then it means that you're already smothering the opposition in central areas with three centre-backs and then Fred and Scott McTominay in front of that. Like, you're forcing them to go around the sides. And that's quite hard to do, particularly with Chelsea. They didn't play wingers. So that can be quite difficult to do. And what it means is you've still got three in midfield and you've still got two strikers. So I thought that that would be the way the United went. I'm not sure. I think it might be the way that they go tomorrow night against Leipzig. But then that becomes kind of interesting because Leipzig play your 3-5-2 or 3-4-3. So what you're then doing is you're playing a formation that seems to work, but you're doing it against a team that play every week, which makes it some ways more of a challenge. But I was surprised that United made the changes that they did in that game. I wasn't certain what Daniel James was expected to add, and it didn't seem like a game for Juan Mata either.
How sustainable then is Paul Pogba as an impact sub for this Manchester United team?
Paul Pogba was an excellent footballer, and he did really well against Newcastle. He did well against Paris as well. So it's like you shouldn't be surprised when he comes onto a football pitch and does something good. And he's capable of doing that from the beginning, but it's difficult to fit him in the way that United want to play. And it's difficult to fit him in unless he is prepared to, I guess, up the intensity and play with a little bit more edge. What we've seen in the beginning of the season is that he mainly walks about waiting for the ball to try something. And you can't play like that. You need to play with greater edge and greater intensity. And if you, as I say, you put Paul Pogba on a football pitch at any point, you shouldn't be surprised if he does something good, but you shouldn't be surprised if the game passes him by either. And there's no need for that second aspect. So unless he is prepared to become more dynamic, or unless the manager's prepared to insist he become more dynamic, because we don't know what conversations they're having, I think impact sub is basically the best role for him, because United defence isn't good enough to carry Pogba not giving them the protection that they need. And they look better without him. I mean, it's only three games, but since United dropped Pogba and Matic, they've gone from conceding, 12 goals in three games to conceding 2 own goals in three games. And obviously there'll be other reasons for that. They're getting fitter. They might be getting better organised. Who knows? But
it's not a coincidence.
No, of course
exactly.
It's not.
Yeah, yeah. OK, I want to ask you about City and what's going on there. Sergio Aguero, it looks like it's going to be out for a month. And they don't actually have a striker at the moment who will be a recognised striker. Maybe they will continue to play the kids that are the few remaining strikers that they have fit on their books. But this is one of those starts to a season for Manchester City that is of a piece with all of last season, when last season was supposed to be the blip and they were supposed to be this unstoppable juggernaut. So what's happening?
I guess, ultimately, Fergie always said that the shelf life of a team is 4 years, 4 seasons, and Guardiola's coming into his 5th season now. And I'd say, ultimately, Guardiola's team, that great team, are finished. Doesn't mean that they're still not good enough to win stuff. They're not still good enough to hand out some absolute hidings. I'm absolutely sure they will. But this team is not going anywhere, and it needs refreshing. And the question is whether, A, Guardiola has the stomach for the job. The players he bought in the summer suggests that he does. And the other question is whether he's got the skill to do it, because it's not something he's ever done before. At Barcelona, he turned up and the players were basically there. He bought Dani Alves and he bought Gerard Piqué, but otherwise the players of that team were there. They needed, like, they were a mess, and they needed him to organise them and extract the absolute maximum from all of them, which he did in unbelievable style, but he didn't build that team. They were there. Then he left after 4 years when they lost that title to Madrid and they needed refreshing. He took a break, which isn't any kind of criticism. Work is hard, and I'm absolutely certain that being a football manager is extremely hard, never mind Jose Mourinho in your hair the whole time. And so, but he stopped. We didn't see whether he had the ability to refresh a team, and we definitely didn't see whether he had the ability to refresh a team while still winning. Then he went to Bayern Munich, and he left after 3 years when the team was coming towards the end. And now he's at City, and now that job needs doing, and we're going to see whether he can do it. And ultimately, the way he's going to do it is he's mainly going to rely on the transfer market to do it. And throughout his career, his transfer market record has been spotty at best, I would say. It was pretty good at Bayern Munich, but at Barcelona, he spent a lot of money on players that didn't work. And at City, he spent a lot of money on players that haven't worked. He's to his second goalkeeper, I think he's bought, was it 3 left-backs, 4 centre-backs, 3 right-backs, and of the right-backs that he has, his favourite one, Kyle Walker, is 30. Of the left-backs, doesn't seem to rate any of them, and rightly so. Centre-backs, it remains to be seen. Whether Aymeric Laporte is a good player, whether he is a really good player, Phil still remains to be seen. We don't know about Ruben Diaz. And ultimately, when you have players like Kompany, David Silva and Sergio Aguero, it's hard to criticise someone sometimes for not replacing them well, because maybe it's impossible. Finding players that good and hitting the mark with your 3 replacements for players that good might be impossible, because if it was easy to replace those players, then we might even start reevaluating whether they're as good as we thought they were. Because these, like Aguero in particular, is a generational player, one of the greatest centre forwards in world football of his era. Where do you find someone that good? I mean, it's kind of slightly strange thing there is that Guardiola tried to replace him 5 years before he needed to.
Yeah.
With Gabriel Jesus, who he thought was a player whose style fit with his more, and Aguero just said, just shut up, and showed that was absolutely not the case. But he's now picking up injuries and he's not as good as he was. Fernandinho's picking up injuries and he's been replaced by Rodri, who's a good player, but he doesn't offer the same leadership, the same dynamism. I mean, still quite good at the tactical fouls, but it's a different kind of player. Kevin De Bruyne is 29 and is getting injured. So what you're left with is you're not left with very many players at their peaks. I mean, it looked like Bernardo was just taken over from David Silva, who was so similar to him, even had the same name. But for some reason, it's hard to see why, seems to have fallen out of favour and has been spending a lot of time on the wing rather than playing in midfield. If they can get him to play in midfield with Rodri and De Bruyne and they'll all be fit, that's a pretty good midfield. But also, Leroy Sané leaving made a huge difference because now they have actually replaced him with Ferran Torres. But Ferran Torres is a right winger, and what you got from Sané is you got a left-footed player who would keep the width on the left wing, which would mean that the opposition was stretched. And what I think it did is, aside from the fact that Sané was a brilliant player, it got Raheem Sterling a lot of tap-ins at the back post because of the width that was the opposition being pulled to the other side by Sané. So on the one hand, renovating this team, refreshing it, is quite a big job. On the other hand, the ifs that it requires, if Laporte and Diaz are good, if they can, if Liam Delap is good, if Bernardo Silva can cement a place in midfield, I mean, those ifs, they're not particularly big ifs. And that's even before we go to Phil Foden, who's no sort of if whatsoever. I mean, assuming he stays fit, he's going to be one of the best players in the world, one of the greatest players of his generation. But it's going to require some patience and some time and some money and some energy. And we'll see whether Guardiola has all of those things, and we'll see whether the players fancy doing it for Guardiola. My guess is that they probably will, because the players who he's played for will have some loyalty.
Yeah.
And the players that he's bringing in will want to play for him. But it's not an easy job. But it is. They do have the players to keep winning in the meantime. But it's beginning to look like they won't have enough to win the title this season.
All right, Daniel, great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.